As Amanda said, my name is Tim Sarong. I work for SUSE, and I'm here to talk about the most exciting thing that you'll ever hear about at any conference in the world, which is software packaging on Linux. So why am I talking about software packaging? Because as Arjen said in the talk that he gave on Monday, a tarball is not a product. This is a good thing about giving a talk. Later in the conference, you can steal quotes from other people's talks. So who primarily develops software here? Several. Who also packages it for some Linux distro? About the same people. More than one distro? One person? Yeah, sure, why not? So if you hack on GIMP or something that all the main distros have already picked up, software packaging is probably not your problem because somebody else is already doing it. But if you're like me, you've got some tarballs that you make available and a source code repo, and casual and new users don't want to deal with that. It's like you're giving them Chinese takeaway, but without a plastic box, it's kind of messy. So I spend most of my time developing on one distro, and I build packages on that distro, which happens to be, OpenSUSE or SLES. But if I want to make my software available to many more people on many distros, it rapidly becomes problematic in terms of resources, hardware, whatever. If you want to provide software for two architectures, five distros, two versions of those, you need a lot of machines, or it's difficult to reproduce things. So the solution to this that I'm here to talk about is the Open Build Service. Has anybody here who I didn't already tell about this earlier in the week heard of the Open Build Service? One, two, three, four. Wow. Okay, anybody used it? One, excellent. So it's a platform for building software packages. It was originally called the OpenSUSE Build Service because it came out of the OpenSUSE project. And it's used for OpenSUSE to build all of the RPMs for a given release and also build the ISO images for a particular release. We also use it internally within SUSE for building the enterprise distros. But the reason that it was renamed recently to the Open Build Service, because it can also build packages for Red Hat, CentOS, Fedora, Mandriva, Debian, and Ubuntu. And it's a web app with a bunch of stuff that sits behind it. There's a public instance running at build.opensuse.org, and you can go and get an account there and you can use it yourself. You can also, there's appliance images of this. You can go and take it and install it on some VMs or some systems in your own environment if you want to run your own system and not be dependent upon anybody else. Or for that matter, if you're doing something which is mixed, some open source and some proprietary stuff, and you needed to keep it away for whatever reason, you could do that. And what you do is you go and define a package. You have to give it a tarball and a spec file or a Debian control file. And then it will go away and spawn a VM instance somewhere, create a clean build environment, and build that package for you. So I'm going to try to make this a little bit of a show and tell. Some terminology first. Within OBS, there's a notion of projects and packages, and a project can have many packages within it. Multiple users or developers can work on a single project on all those packages, and they can have different access rights. They can be a maintainer and do anything, or a reviewer and not do so much, or a reader, and I've never been one of them. Anyway. Projects define the target distros, and packages within a project you can specify to build for all of those distros or some subset thereof. So, and every user has a home project. This is my home project. Not sure if that text is too small, but I've got two packages in there. You can just see two packages on the left. And I've defined a bunch of target distributions down the right. Now, I've got, there's a couple of things building for, something building for Fedora and something building for OpenSUSE 14 here. Now, if you hit the repositories link at the top, you can get more detail about all of these. There's some flags down the bottom where you can disable for the entire project building and publishing and whatnot. And you can also go through and add other target distributions. You can see Debian and whatnot here. Ubuntu's somewhere down under the bottom of the screen. Now, the two packages that I've got here are Hawk and OpenAstro. I'm going to briefly talk about OpenAstro. About 4 months ago, my wife and I were at a friend's place for dinner with her laptop, and somehow the topic came up, is there any astrology software that runs on Linux? And I had no idea. So I Googled around and discovered that there is an astrology package called OpenAstro, which the developer has made available as a tarball, and there's an Ubuntu PPA, and there's an Arch package, but nothing else. And I wanted an OpenSUSE package. So I went and created this package here. There's only two files. And what I did was, I did this all from inside my web browser. OBS has a feature, you can see the second file there is a download service, so you can actually tell it to go and leech the tarball from somewhere else. You don't have to download it to your system first and then upload it. It can also pull from Git and SVN, which is interesting. I haven't tried that myself, but you can. And I wrote a spec file. You can't get around writing a spec file to do the packaging. It's just necessary to have an RPM built. There's generators available for some things. If you were packaging Ruby gems as RPMs, there's a gem to RPM thingy that you can do. Some things are easier than others.
Converter back and forth between specs and DSS?
Not that I'm aware of. Doesn't mean there's not one, but I'm not aware of it.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. Some things are easier than others. Python, for instance, if this is legible, in a spec file, you've usually got to list out all of the files that are in your package. But here, the Python setup pi has a record RPM feature, which just dumps out that list of files, and that goes straight back into the spec here. And so I wrote this spec file in about 20 minutes in a web browser while I was out for dinner somewhere. And once that's done, it goes off and builds it. You can see a live build log, which refreshes in real time or near real time. And at the end of that, I wound up with two architectures of OpenSUSE package, which then gets published to a repository on download.opensuse.org. And that's a RPMMD style thing, so you can point Yum at that or Zipper on Slurs or OpenSUSE. But that's mostly boring because it's only one distro. It's just an example of, I did this thing in my web browser. Oh, cool.
So what you're saying is you could install it by the end of the dinner?
I could install it by the end of the dinner, exactly. So, yeah. Slightly more complex example is a program called Hawk, which is something I work on. It's a web-based GUI for managing pacemaker high-availability clusters. And in my copious free time, I'm trying to get builds for non-SUSE distros going. So here I've got a OpenSUSE 11.4 build, and I've got a Fedora 14 build. I could have a Fedora 15 build, except Hawk runs on Rails 2, and the later Fedora has Rails 3, so that doesn't work. That's not the fault of the build service. That's my software. So there's a little bit more stuff here. I've got a spec file and a tarball, and I've got a couple of patches, which I need to make this package build on SUSE. Those patches are not applicable to include upstream, so I haven't pushed them up. I've just added them here. And if we look at part of the spec file, there's some generic stuff at the top, and then there's a if 0 SUSE version macro to include those patches only when you're building on SUSE. There's some more generic stuff. Further down, some of the dependency names vary on different base distros. So here, if we're building on SUSE, I build require lib pacemaker devel, whereas on anything else, I require pacemaker libs devel because the underlying dependency names are different. There's actually something you can set up in there that will automatically do renaming and fiddling with spec files on that for particular packages, but I didn't use that in this case. And finally, there's a special thing for Fedora only. One of Hawk's dependencies in turn required something that wasn't specified, so it gets pulled in there. And as I make changes to my package definition, you can go back through and see what I've changed. I can see diffs of changes that I've made to spec files over time. So there's actually revision control for the packages that's going on here. Now, I didn't do all of this in the web GUI. Rather, behind this, there's a command line interface to it as well. So it's called OSC. You can go and run OSC, check out. It works just like any other revision control system effectively. You can check out a package from OBS. It lands in a working directory on your system. You can add files to the package. You can build the package on your local machine. It will build it in a Chroot by default, but you can also make it build it in a Xen or a KVM instance, which can be a good idea if your dependent packages were written by crazy people that you don't trust and you don't want them installed in a Chroot. You're better off building in a VM. It tends to be a good idea when you're making packaging changes to actually just build them locally until you've got it working, partly because it'll set up a new build environment each time, but it'll cache all the dependencies. So the next time you do a build, it's relatively quicker to set up. And then when you're done, you can diff what you've got there with what's back on the server, edit the change log, check in your changes, and then OBS will go and build packages for everything else. OSC itself, the command line client, is of course also packaged with OBS. It builds for loads of stuff. So you can run the client on CentOS, Debian, Fedora. There's Ubuntu somewhere further down. The Mandriva build is broken at the moment. I don't know why, but if you were interested, you could go and click that thing and go and look at the build log and then maybe do something about that. And in this instance, because this is building for Debian-based distros as well, there's the tarball and the spec file, but there's also a Debian control file and a Debian changelog and possibly a Debian-specific patches. So there are also collaboration features. I mentioned before that you have multiple projects which can have many packages in them. Projects can depend on each other, so there's a project on there which has, a much newer version of KDE than might be in your base operating system. You can build your project in terms of that KDE from that newer build, which in turn is based on the base distro. And you can, if you're not the maintainer of a given project, you can still assist people in that packaging if you feel so inclined. You can branch a package from somebody else's project and then you get a branched version of it in your home project. And then you can make changes there if the the other maintainer is lazy, asleep, or on holiday or something, and you need to pull in a new upstream tarball or whatever, you can do that, get your own build, play with it, and then you can submit the changes back to the main project, and somebody there will review them, and hopefully they'll accept them. So, for a walkthrough of that, this is a pacemaker package in the almost illegible Network HA clustering project, which includes a bunch of packages for doing high availability stuff. So, and this is, you know, things you can do here. So I've gone and branched that package, which ends up in my, in a sub-project of my home project. And here I've gone and made some changes. I want to include some extra files in this package, so I'm getting rid of some RM lines. And I can see the diff here, and then I can submit those changes back to the main project, give a description for here's what I've done. My branch project can be deleted after this point if I don't need to keep it around. That's just the only thing I'm doing there. The people who maintain the main project will get an email notification if requests come in for changes of any kind. So here you can see that I've made this request, and I'm going to be slightly schizophrenic here because I'm actually a maintainer of the main repo anyway, so this is a bit silly. But so I've come back, and this is, I know as maintainer that other Tim needs to do some more work here. So I've said, you need to also add these files to the files list, go away, decline the request. And then you can see the history of what's happened to a request, and it can go through different states. Here it's just gone from new to decline, but if you've got reviewers set up, it can go from new to review, and then a reviewer who can read things but not necessarily make changes can go, yeah, this is okay, and it goes through, goes through like that. So, yeah, enough of the screenshots. I'm just going to fiddle with my display slightly. And break it. Go me. Let's do that again. Oh, come on. That's better. Keep. Okay, now nothing bad's going to happen, is it? So, I thought it might be fun to actually package some software. So, I have this ridiculously small program here, which is little more than Hello World. And is everybody happy with it? Doesn't look too malicious. I have a make file, which is mostly boring. The archive thing, this is in a Mercurial repository, so the archive thing down the bottom is a handy way for me to get a tarball out of it. So I've got that, and I can go make archive, and I've now got a tarball here. So if I jump back over to the real OBS in my home project, and I go to packages, and the wireless is working. Create package. Testing in 2011. Save that. Now we have a package that has no files in it. So if I go back to my terminal and I go see checkout 2011, this will create my working directory and, well, check out nothing into it. It'll just give me that directory. So if I go in there and I copy the tarball. What have I done wrong there? Yep. Copy the tarball in here and we need a spec file. Here's one I prepared earlier, which is, well, it's a small package, it's fairly boring. It's make install, there's one file. So that's fine. OSC status to see what's here. These two files haven't been added to the repo yet, so add remove will add and remove anything that's in the directory so that it matches up with what's there. Let's see, better make a changelog entry. That actually gets magically stuck on the end of the RPM changelog. It's physically in a separate file, but it's just... better add that too. And check that in. Here we see a diff of what's in my working area, what's about to go up to OBS, and we're all happy with that. And away we go. So if we go back to OBS now and reload that screen, something interesting should be happening. Don't be fooled by the word broken down there. It's just slightly confused because it's only just been created. Okay, so now some things are building for some platforms and they're scheduled on others. There's a whole bunch of systems out there and there's a scheduler that decides where to put things. So that was quick. That was too quick. That should have taken about 5 minutes. That's better. So if you go up the top here, you can see it's doing stuff. It's firing up KVM somewhere and it's pre-installing all of the required dependencies. And this will run through. And if you turn on the start refresh thing, you can tail it if you're so inclined. So meanwhile, if I go back to my home project, which is where I define the target distributions, because I want to build for some other things too, go to repositories and add well, that's a new OpenSUSE which appeared a couple of days ago. And let's have a SLES and a couple of Debians and some Ubuntu's. Are there any of these distros that I'm picking that anybody would particularly like to anyway, that should do. Okay, so now we've got a much longer list of target distributions. These are the flags that you can set up for things. You can selectively disable for different architectures or different distros if you need to. But let's just go back to that one. And that's mostly still going. Okay, so in order to build this for Debian, I need a handful of files to do a Debian build, which are here. I hope I just didn't overwrite a file. That would be very sad. To here. Okay. Now, what I've had to add here to get a Debian build, I've got a 1, 2, 3. There's about another 4 files there. A couple of these things are the things that would usually be in the Debian subdirectory of a tarball, but I don't have those in my tarball, so I'm specifying them here. So there's the DSC file. And another one, and I've got a change log which I became unbelievably frustrated by a missing character in. I've actually got about 12 minutes of Debian packaging experience in my life. So the other one is the rules file, which I liberated a template from. There was a copy of this up on the build service wiki. And all I've done is put in my make all there and
destination
directory.
Sorry? Newer version, you actually only need a normal rules file.
Okay.
The more recent dev help is now a magic rules file that just goes do all the usual
things. Yeah, cool. Okay. And these things, if I actually had the, if I was starting with something that somebody had already done some Debian packaging work on and these things were already in the Debian subdirectory in there, then I need to worry much less about them and they don't need to be included there. So, so let's add those in and commit that back to the build service. That changelog message there, that's only visible within the OBS, of course, so that's just something that you can go back and look at what packaging you've done. Now, oh, and here I can go log, sorry, and I can see those previous changes that I've made to the packaging, and you can OSC diff dash R12, and you can see what you've changed from revision to revision.
Why is it Debian block rules? What's always been called? The file is called Debian slash rules.
What will happen internally is that those files that would ordinarily be in the Debian subdirectory, in this case, the build service is taking them and stuffing them in there somehow while it's doing the build. And
so what happens if you want to have Debian source format set?
Presumably,
the
main Debian
dot source
format, isn't it?
I mean, Debian slash source slash format.
Right, Debian dot source dot format.
Does it just change all dots in
platform? No, I think it's... I don't like to speculate at times like this. I don't think it's a global thing. I'm annoyingly not well positioned to answer spectacularly specific Debian packaging questions. There is a bunch of information about all of this stuff on the build service wiki, which goes into some more detail about things.
Any reason why it needs to not have any subdirectory?
Yeah, you can. There's two ways to do it. If your source tarball already had a Debian subdirectory in it, that's fine. You can just use that. And so you've only got the I think it's the DSC file at this level, and everything else is already in the tarball. So that's fine. You can start with a Debian package if you like. Exactly. So that's fine. There's something else I was going to mention about that too. Nope, don't know what it was. Sorry. So these are apparently all building now. An awful lot of them are apparently scheduled now. I was kind of hoping they'd finish.
So, getting an account on build.
Yeah.
How does that all work?
It's account on build ties back to there's a Novell account which works for the build service. It works for the Bugzilla, and I think ties in with the Novell customer center stuff. If you, you know, but it's basically you can register here for nothing in your name, email, that sort of thing, and then you can go and use it. So that's not too painful. Ooh, look, we got succeeded once. Hey, the Debian one's finished first. Go Debian. interesting thing I discovered the other day. Behind the scenes, it seems to be firing off both, depending on which build host it's running on. Some of them are KVM and some of them are Xen. And I found that, interestingly, the Xen ones ripped through the Debian builds really quickly, and the KVM ones didn't. And whether that's because there was something that happened to be already cached on those machines, and I was lucky, or a different VM thing, not sure.
Or maybe it's just the liberal application of within my data.
I really hope that's not in there.
No, it wasn't in my data. That's the point. When you're doing builds and tests and things like that,
yes,
you tend
yes.
to want not everything. And it may be that maybe then it's thinking probably in KVM or the other way around,
yeah.
And you actually don't want either of them to do because you don't care. Yeah, the Pluto we had before had a big sort of going.
Yeah.
So does it just magically see that you've got a Debian subdirectory or a Debian .rules file and add those to the build list? Or?
No, you've got to go and create those.
You've got to go and mention that you want to build for the for whatever distro's here up in the repositories thing, and
so provide what you need for whatever distro.
Yeah. So basically, if there's a spec file in there, it will quite happily build with that for any of the RPM-based distros that you've specified, and if it's a DSC, it will quite happily build for any of the Debian-based distros that you've specified.
If you add a Debian distro and don't provide a DSC, or add an RPM-based distro and don't provide a DSC, then you can only pick your build file.
Correct. It'll actually sit there and it'll say not unresolvable, something else. It doesn't bother trying if it doesn't have the pieces that it needs.
Are there a lot of users of the open build service like this because they're probably making it lots and lots of doing?
Sorry?
Are there a lot of users of the open build service? Do you have a way?
It tends to be slower when Europe's awake, as a rule.
But then, you know, it's getting too slow, and you don't want to wait for them to add more, you can just deploy your own.
Yeah, but you can deploy your own one, or, you know, if you're... you can run any of those builds for any of those distros locally on your own machine by running OSC build, and then it'll actually go and download all of the dependencies, but...
So you can actually tell which distro you
want
to build when you do that.
Yep.
So in theory, if you want to just get it done, you can just make it do all of them.
Yeah. So I can go...
You can create
the voice to your remote mate. Yeah. So here I can say OSC repos, and this gives me a list of all of the defined targets and architectures. So if I wanted to build this locally... I586, and then it would. Oh, hell. I'm not going to let this run through. sorry. And because there's multiple possible things that you could run a build from.
Not smart enough to work out that one goes with one particular distro.
Not in that context. The build, the server can, but.
Right.
Yeah. So this is now
you
about.
The OC client to know that because you know, it's
a
pretty simple rule.
Yeah. Okay, so that's now going to flood the wireless if I decide to. All of the projects on there, they've all got auto-generated GPG keys. So all of the packages that are built within a given project on OBS are all signed by that project's key. Now, this gives you an assurance that it was a clean build from that project, but if you actually want to, this is what I was getting at before about if your dependencies were made by crazy people, you should go and look at the list of maintainers of the project that you're basing things on if you, you know, want to be sure about that. Yeah, exactly. So I've got a few of those built now. So software.opensuse.org will search all of the software that's up on build. So it doesn't include home projects by default, it only includes the main projects. So if I go and search here for OSPC 2011, I've got a CentOS in a couple of architectures. There's source RPMs and for each of x86 and x86-64. There's a Fedora one, a RHEL one, another RHEL one, OpenSUSE, SLES. There's a Debian one. And yeah, that's it so far. So if any more of them build, they'll appear there. Yeah, you can. Somewhere back in the project, there's a delete published packages, that sort of thing. And you can obviously delete. You can create your own sub project of your home project for doing something for a while, and then you can delete it later, and it all goes away. So if anybody's feeling brave, it'll work. It should work. So just for anybody who wasn't here earlier, in case there is anybody, that's the only code in the package. That's what I packaged, I swear.
Here we go. Is it 1.0?
Sorry?
Is it 1.0?
It's
1.1. No, sorry. 0.0.1. Yeah, 0.0.1. So it's very, very early in development. Oh yeah. I almost wanted to somehow incorporate a giant pile of stuff from CCAN, but I didn't have time. So. Was that easy?
It was.
So I don't need to change the title of the talk. Okay. What do we got for time? Am I running under? Wow, I'm running under.
It was so easy.
It was so easy. My talk's going under. Other things, OBS itself is all GPL, so the source is available at it's either in Gitorious or GitHub, so you can go and hack on it and play with it. There's all sorts of technologies in there depending on what you're into. There's Ruby on Rails and JavaScript and Perl and God knows what. Yes, you could. Yep. Sorry? Data center. I'll mention that in a sec, actually. There's other groups of people that are using it. The Mego distro uses it. The VLC people apparently used it, as did GNOME 3, Dell, Cray. I think they've actually got instances that they run themselves internally. There's somebody, I can't remember who it is, but there's a link to that company's story on the wiki somewhere, running their own instance, and they were building an entire distro, or a hell of a lot of a distro, with many, many people. And it would take an entire week to build all of the packages in the distro. So this guy went and managed to have somebody authorize the purchase of these giant quad-core things with 64 gig of RAM to use as the worker systems. And he half of that RAM he used as a RAM disk for caching things, and everything was on a dedicated GigE backend so that the cache packages all were flying around at light speed, and he had this entire distro that then took 5 hours to build, just because he threw enough hardware at it. Yeah. But and
probably renting cloud computing capabilities for a day or two.
That'd be interesting, because the way it works is there's a VM image that you can go and download of OBS server, and you can install it on your system. And the server's got all of the interface and the everything, and it hands off work to workers. The server by itself includes one worker, but there's a separate one that you can go and just install a whole bunch of workers and have them talk to each other. You can also chain instances together somehow. So one thing that I wanted to do in my copious free time was set one of these up at home so that I could cache a whole lot of the stuff from the build servers in Germany, so that if I was running local builds, things got a bit faster. I haven't actually done that yet, but that would be an interesting exercise. There's an Android client, which I haven't tried because I have a BlackBerry. That's fairly recent. There's various APIs. There's a REST API for doing all sorts of things. Somebody asked me earlier in the week, could they set up their own web interface where somebody said, I want this very specific version of PHP on my server, and then could that go and talk to the build server and do things behind? And my answer was, that would be a very interesting project. But I think it's something that you could do with the REST APIs that are behind it. There was a recent Google Summer of Code project to get an Arch Linux backend for OBS, so there's something going on there. There were rumors that somebody was trying to add a Windows backend. I'm not sure what the status of that is, but yep.
That would presumably have to make self-installing packages with install builder or something.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I know you can cross-compile stuff.
Yeah. Making packages is the hard part.
Yeah. There's... What else is there?
BSD.
No, there's no BSD.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. So something started there a couple of years ago, but more recently a bunch of OpenSUSE community people have been trying to get OpenSUSE at least building on ARM, and there is actually there's a project on OBS, OpenSUSE Factory ARM or something like that, which is they've got a minimal number of packages in there, and somebody had set up I'm not sure I can remember this well enough to explain it properly. There was some reasonably clever cross-compilation stuff in there so that you could, it cross-compiled ARM stuff and ran it in a QEMU environment on x86 64 hardware to do the build, but some pieces of it were running as native cross-compiling stuff in there as well, so it somehow sped up.
Testbox.
Sorry?
Testbox.
I'm not sure. There has been, I don't actually know if there's any PowerPC workers running. I know that the system does work with PowerPC, so if you had PowerPC hardware. Yeah, I guess you could if you could do it for
ARM. I'm not sure. PowerPC main mini, of course, Apple doesn't give a shit about them.
Yeah.
But the problem is that only some Linux distros are still being maintained in PowerPC, so it's kind of nice if you use it to just build more packages automatically.
I know that there must have been at some point, because you used to be able to get PowerPC OpenSUSE, whoever was maintaining that must have become steadily less interested,
sure.
Because it sort of went away. But I know that the system itself does, you know, x86, x86-64, PowerPC, PowerPC 64, what's the other one? Itanium are all known to work. It's just that the ones that you will actually see at build.opensuse.org are just the x86 and x86-64.
And of course, going the other way, if you need to go back to i3, I think those are all i5 basics. I've got an old machine that won't run those instruction sets. So if you want to build packages that are compatible with old CPUs, you can presumably do that.
It's just flags. The i5 86 there is just to make it match whatever the base.
Just a quick one. I was wondering if you have some notion how much work that's involved, getting up your own systems of one of these things that you know, they're all very nice, as sort of when you actually implement your own,
So I don't have a link for that here. I'm about to answer your question. That top URL is mostly just, hey, look at this, with links back to other things. There's the wiki, which is the next one down. There's a portal page there with all sorts of tutorials for setting up your own instance, best practices, and so on. The path of least resistance is to go and download the VM image of the OBS server. There's a VM image, there might be a live CD image and something else. Because it's already been set up and it works, and it's actually configured such that the software repositories on that system actually point back to the build server. So if you happen to need to upgrade your running, the operating system on which your build service is running, that all works. I tried to get this going on my laptop. I thought it would be fun to actually burn my laptop out by doing that. And for various annoying reasons, I was trying to do this in VirtualBox. And one of the things that it does require is functioning DHCP and DNS on your network in order to, it's got something to do with how the how that VM image picks up its host name and then uses that to automatically set up some database things and some other bits and pieces. That did not work in VirtualBox on my laptop. That probably would work if you were doing it on a real network.
And you might be able to plug your Xbox sitting up with the existing server on the outside of the VM.
Yeah. So there is somewhere on there. There is a long and detailed tutorial by I think it was the guy who had the systems with the 64 gig of RAM, talking about all of the things that he went through to set up the server, set up the workers, and everything. So there's some really good documentation on there about doing that. If you were setting it up from scratch yourself, using the various OBS packages on your distro and manually configuring things, I suspect it might take you rather longer. Sorry.
Thank you. How does it handle NoArch packages?
Mm. Magically, it works.
Okay.
Imagine we've got every afternoon.
But it's kind of weird to have a prol project, say,
you
work on all the apps.
Yeah. In a I've got something here. Where have I got that? I don't know. No. I know within a spec file you can say no architecture here, and then and then in the repository that gets created at the end, you end up with the packages in a NoArch directory, and it all just works. Anything else I was going to mention? That might be about it, actually.
I've got a project that's got an analytically complex build process where you run a script and then that sets up all the Debian control files and stuff like that, and then it builds from that.
You would, off the top of my head, you would probably have to have those pre-prepared. It's the sort of thing where you do that. It's one of those chicken and egg things. What's a good example? The packages in the clustering repo, Pacemaker, Chorusync, etc. The upstream developers for this have got template spec files inside those tarballs because they already.
Yeah.
They're doing this either because they need to or because they're good citizens or whatever. And what you would end up doing is taking a copy of that spec file out of the tarball, maybe starting with that and then putting the tarball in there as well. And so as a packager, you do have that weird catch 22 thing sometimes.
I'm not sure. Shift the tarball that they like make up here and make getting stuff as targets.
Yeah.
Before you, and yeah, you say
of course, the worst case is things like the proprietary video card drivers that the radio ones, for example, have, if you get a tarball it's not even a tarball, it's a self-destructing binary, and you run that, and one of the targets says, hey, why don't I build you a dev file?
Yeah.
And then an option, you can go, let's just install it, or you can go, no, let's build a dev file instead.
Yeah.
So effectively,
you still have to write the spec file to define
But yes. Yeah.
You're lucky you're really
lucky. Yeah.
Cool.
It's something that I don't actually develop OBS myself, but it's something that I use every day in my work, and I found it really useful, which is why I came to give this talk.
It's used internally.
It suits it, but I like good tools, and I never get involved in distro wars, but I really like good tools. So here's a tool.
Yeah, if you're a developer who wants to make other people's lives easier, why not provide them with packages? Exactly. Rather than just forcing them to do the work.
Yeah. Have you got a question, Aine, that I've been ignoring? Sorry. Okay. somehow my eye kind of has been fixated down here.
Really pointing them to people like those game developers who are starting to make game available links, for example.
Yeah.
And they often have no idea how am I going to make this available with too many distros? And the
answer is, do this, exactly. because it's like you can, it can be annoying. You can have problems trying to figure out if you've got some obscure dependencies. You've got to actually check. Oh, it's called this over here, and it's called that over there, and. But it's not that hard. It's, if you've got a vague idea about what the software is that you're trying to package, and if you can read a wiki page and understand. Some instructions on how to write a spec file or the Debian bits and pieces. You can build stuff. That's good.
All right. Here's a present from us. Thanks.
Thank
Tim for his interesting talk.
The next talk's at 2:30. It's about modelling tsunamis.